Registered nurses at 10 Northern California hospitals began a two-day strike today to protest employer demands for sweeping cuts in nurses and patient care standards. Some 5,000 nurses are represented by the California Nurses Association at the 10 hospitals. And last Wednesday, the Nurses Association gathered in four cities, calling on politicians to pass the Robin Hood tax, which would bring in $350 billion in revenue. On today's Your Call, we are speaking with the California Nurses Association about effective organizing. How does the nurses union use its power to influence policy, and how they manage to stay independent of political parties? Join us after the news.
BBC News with Nick Kelly. Israel has denied that it has finalized a ceasefire deal with Hamas in Gaza, despite a number of Palestinian and Egyptian sources saying a truce would be declared shortly. The Israeli government spokesman Mark Regev told the BBC that until a diplomatic solution was achieved, establishing a long-term quiet in southern Israel, its military operation in Gaza would continue.
I would like to tell you that there is an arrangement that will bring about a ceasefire. We're not there yet. The diplomatic ball is still in play. My prime minister is currently meeting with the UN Secretary General here in Jerusalem. Later on tonight, we expect him to be meeting with the US Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. The diplomatic ball, as I say, is still in play. I hope that diplomacy can bring a long-term solution for the people of southern Israel who deserve to live without the fear of an incoming rocket coming from the Gaza Strip. I hope it's possible to have a diplomatic solution, but we're not there yet.
Rebels in the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo say they've seized the regional capital, Goma. Fighters from the M23 rebel group entered the city earlier on Tuesday with little resistance from the Congolese army or United Nations peacekeepers. Gabriel Gatehouse reports from Goma.
For nearly two decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has been in a state of almost permanent conflict. The United Nations mission here is the largest peacekeeping force anywhere in the world. And yet, Goma fell today to just a few hundred men. The UN and the Congolese government have accused Rwanda of supporting the rebels. Rwanda denies the accusation, but this mineral-rich part of the eastern Congo now once again threatens to pull neighbouring countries into a wider African war.
Britain has recognised the new coalition of opposition groups as the sole legitimate representative of the Syrian people, becoming the second Western country to do so. The Foreign Secretary, William Hague, called the formation of the group a major breakthrough and said London would provide increased support to it. The coalition will, for example, receive from Britain communications equipment worth more than $1 million. The United Nations says there's been a dramatic fall in the rates of HIV infections in many countries, while more people are receiving treatment than ever before. The UN AIDS programme called this an historic slowing down of the epidemic. Here's Imogen Folks.
Some of the countries worst affected by HIV/AIDS are making the best progress. In Malawi, Botswana and Zambia, infection rates dropped by over 50%. And for the first time ever, over half of those eligible for treatment, more than 8 million people worldwide, are receiving it. But in regions where diagnosis and treatment remain patchy, Eastern Europe, North Africa and the Middle East, infection rates continue to rise.
World News from the BBC. Police in Bangladesh have arrested more than 50 supporters of the country's main Islamic party, Jamaat-e-Islami. On Monday, party members clashed with police during a demonstration near the capital, Dhaka. The protesters were calling for the release of Jamaat-e-Islami leaders who are accused of carrying out atrocities during the War of Independence. The US technology company Hewlett-Packard says it's setting aside $8.8 billion because of what it calls serious accounting improprieties and misrepresentations in a British software company, Autonomy, which it acquired last year. HP says it has referred its complaint to regulators in the US and Britain for civil and criminal investigation. Here's Andrew Walker.
In a statement, HP says that its ability to fairly value the British company was severely impacted by what it calls misrepresentation and lack of disclosure. HP says it now believes that Autonomy was substantially overvalued at the time of the acquisition due to the misstatement of its financial performance. HP says it's preparing to take action in the courts to recoup what it can for its shareholders, as well as referring the matter to regulators. A statement issued by Autonomy's former management says the allegations against them are false.
A financial trader in London accused of causing a huge loss at the Swiss bank UBS has been jailed for 7 years after being found guilty of two counts of fraud. At a trial in London, Kwaku Adeboli, a former investment banker, was convicted of fraud relating to losses of $2.3 billion. And the Russian Premier League has held an emergency meeting to look at ways to stamp out football hooliganism. There's been a series of incidents at recent matches, the worst last weekend, when Dynamo Moscow's goalkeeper received a burn to an eye after a firecracker was thrown from the crowd. Officials are now proposing that in future, if any dangerous object is thrown from the stands, all fans in that section of the stadium should receive a temporary ban. BBC News.
Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. Registered nurses with the California Nurses Association began a two-day strike today at 10 Northern California hospitals in an ongoing dispute over wages, benefits, and service cutbacks. The hospitals include Alta Bates Summit in Berkeley, Good Samaritan Hospital in San Jose, and Eden Medical Center in Castro Valley. Some 5,000 nurses are represented by the California Nurses Association, National Nurses United, at the 10 hospitals. And then last Wednesday, the nurses joined Robinhood tax supporters in New York, Boston, LA, and San Francisco to call on members of Congress to say no to cuts in Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and food stamps. The Nurses Association has been pushing hard for the Robinhood tax, also known as the financial transaction tax. It's a 50-cent tax on every $100 of Wall Street trades. That's a tax of one half of 1%, but it adds up to $350 billion a year. Here in San Francisco, dozens of nurses gathered outside of San Francisco District Office of Representative Nancy Pelosi. According to the National Nurses United blog, Pelosi's district director, Dan Bermel, dismissively told the nurses that they had 90 seconds to talk to him. And then the California Nurses Association also worked to defeat Prop 32, which would have barred unions from using payroll deductions for political contributions. The California Nurses Association, National Nurses United, was founded in 1903. It's an organization of registered nurses, one of the nation's fastest growing labor organizations in the U.S., with more than 86,000 members in hospitals, clinics, and home health agencies in all 50 states. In the past 15 years, National Nurses United has grown by nearly 400%. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about what we can learn from their organizing efforts. Unlike so many other groups, the nurses have managed to stay independent of political parties. So how have they done it? Today, we're spending the hour with Deanne McEwen, co-president of the California Nurses Association and vice president of National Nurses United. And Deanne has worked for the past 3 decades as a nurse. Hi, Deanne. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much, Rose. It's just my pleasure, and it's a privilege to be here with you and your listeners today.
Well, it's so great to have you, and it's amazing when you read just how your group has changed over the past couple of decades and just all the work that you're doing on the ground. So first off, as union representation in this country is just so low, how have you managed to grow by nearly 400% in the past 15 years?
That's a great question, Rose, and if I may, I want to answer that by saying I was listening to the news at the top of the hour about the global AIDS crisis, and, you know, our union, Professional Association, we were really proud to stand shoulder to shoulder in Washington, D.C., July 24th, marching for the financial transaction tax as part of the We Can End AIDS Day of Action. Mm-hmm. during the International AIDS Conference. And you know, people with HIV and AIDS, there are patients in the hospitals. And as a registered nurse, my career certainly spanning over 38 years as direct care registered nurse, you know, when I see a problem, I've done an assessment, and I see the impact of this disease and the social conditions and the disparities and the discrimination that takes place, and I see how that affects all of our health. And so as nurses across the country, to answer your question, we have a duty. It's inherent in the social contract that we work to change those circumstances. And so we Florence Nightingale said the most important thing for nurses is to know what to observe, and then what you do with that knowledge, it's not essentially powerful to have knowledge. It informs our outrage, certainly, when it goes to looking at what's happening in the world today. But we take action, and so that's why nurses collectively are joining to become what Ralph Nader has said, you know, the pulse of the labor movement.
And give us just an overall sketch of the California Nurses Association, National Nurses United.
Well, overall, we're a professional association and labor organization. So besides the bread and butter shop floor issues that, of course, are part of the traditional trade union movement where we address wages, hours, and working conditions, we're a social union where we look at our interests are aligned with the interests of all the people in our communities that we live with, that we work for on behalf of. All of us should have a job that pays living wages, decent shelter, wholesome food, a pure, wholesome environment, access to public education. So, you know, our interests are aligned with those of the community, and I believe that that's why the community trusts us so much. They see that all of us should have these things, and they understand that as their advocates, we're standing alongside of them.
And the nurses are involved in so many actions. Let's talk about what's happening today. Nurses began a two-day strike at 10 Northern California hospitals in an ongoing dispute over wages, benefits, and service cuts. Tell us about that. What's going on?
Well, if out on the line with those nurses at those facilities, you're not going to hear any of them talking about their wages. Nurses in this economy make a decent standard of living. What we're talking about and protesting are the service cuts and the cuts that Sutter's proposing to these nurses that are going to impact their health, and it's going to impact the health of the communities and access to health care. Everyone should have a access to a decent, single, excellent standard of health care. And so we, as members of the California Nurses Association, National Nurses United, have been at the forefront, standing as the last line of defense between the patients and the people in our community, and Sutter's Wall Street-style gambling with the health of people in this community.
And so tell us more about what are the main issues here? How are patients being affected by all of this?
Well, let's look at this. You know, as a healthcare corporation, they've accumulated nearly $4.2 billion in profits since 2005, despite the austerity that we see for the 99% of us out there. They're among the wealthiest hospital chains in the United States. So why are they proposing cutbacks in healthcare benefits for nurses that work in their facilities? You know, we should all have access to those things. And so the management's rejected our proposals for improvements in safe staffing, other patient care conditions. You know, we want to be sure that the most experienced nurses that are organically rooted in this community, who are accountable to the people in this community, continue to work here and represent the interests of the patients here. So they're demanding termination of health coverage for nurses and techs who work less than 30 hours of work per week. And, you know, all healthcare workers should be healthy, And that helps promote and ensure the health of the patients that we care for.
And I just want to let listeners know, you can find more information about these strikes. The picket lines began at 7 a.m., and there's details about what's happening today. A number of actions are kicking off actually at 11 and also at noon, 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock. San Leandro, Oakland, Vallejo, Antioch, Castro Valley, San Jose, and Berkeley. And then there's also a description specifically about why the nurses are on strike. And Deanne, you've been a nurse for more than three decades. What major changes have you seen in your field over that time?
Well, in terms of nursing care, patients still need the same kinds of services when they're sick and in the hospital. What we're seeing, though, is that there's been major cutbacks in terms of access. It's become less fair. Patients now that are coming into the hospitals, they're sicker and sicker because they are not insured, they're not insurable, and this, is a byproduct of the managed care and for-profit health insurance industry. You know, we don't have a health care system in this country. If you're sick, you're on your own, basically. And so what I've seen is where hospital employers used to be more aligned with the interests of nurses and the patients in their community, they're starting to close their doors, they're starting to eliminate their services, and the cutbacks that we're protesting today, again, all have an impact on our communities, and so it's going to, we see the crisis every day, people that are coming in sicker, that are in their 40s and 50s, even young children, they're dying of diseases, illnesses, injuries that are largely preventable if they're treated early. And we believe that that's just unconscionable, and we're working to change that.
And how do working conditions for nurses in California compare to other states?
Well, because of our historic nurse-to-patient ratio law, which as an organization, it took us 12 years to get that legislation passed, and we did that by community organizing patients in the hospital. You know, there were reports of before the law was passed, patients coming in and calling 911 for help. They weren't able to get a nurse to come in a timely manner, and they're bringing in family members to help get attention to them for their needs. And to us, again, we understood that hospitals, as they were cutting back on their staffing and were enriching themselves at the expense of patients and their communities, we saw that we needed to step in. The public has a right to know that when nurses are on the outside, there's something wrong on the inside. So hospitals purport to provide safe, therapeutic, and effective care, but that's our definition of quality as nurses. What they're always looking at is their bottom line. And they should be reinvesting those healthcare dollars into the needs of the patients in the community. They shouldn't be cutting back on services. And they should be ensuring that there are sufficient numbers of registered nurses at the bedside to meet the needs of all patients at all times. And again, several studies, evidence-based studies published in peer-reviewed journals have demonstrated this time and time again that your health and your ability to survive a hospitalization without preventable injury or harm to your health is tied to the number of registered nurses at the bedside.
We are speaking with Deanne McEwen, co-president of the California Nurses Association and vice president of National Nurses United. Again, nurses are on strike today at 10 Northern California hospitals in an ongoing dispute over wages, benefits, and service cutbacks. And we've been wanting to invite the California Nurses Association onto the show to talk about their organizing. They are involved in so many different campaigns, and they have done so much effective organizing. We're also going to talk about the Robin Hood tax, also known as the financial transaction tax. So if you have any questions for Deanne, about successful organizing. If you're a member of the California Nurses Association, what do you think works? And what can we learn from the CNA? They have managed, unlike so many other groups, to also stay independent of political parties. And we will also talk about that. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So, Deanne, let's talk about organizing. What really works for the California Nurses Association, and where do you look for, inspiration to find out what does work out on the streets?
Well, for inspiration, really, it's just that our interests as nurses are aligned with everybody in our community, the health of the service worker in the hotel, gardener helping people in the neighborhood keep their yards tidy, and all of our health is intertwined. So our health is bound up with your health, and the diseases that we see emerging globally don't respect neighborhoods, city borders, state borders, national borders anymore. So, we're part of an international movement of unions that believe in the social unionism model of organizing, we're working around wider political struggles for human rights and social justice. And, just what does it mean to be a person that's in a participatory democracy? How should we engage people and inspire them and encourage them to vote their beliefs?
Well, and you are getting a lot of attention for the Robin Hood tax. Mm-hmm. This is also known as the financial transaction tax.
Yes.
How did you decide to take this issue on?
Well, the financial transaction tax, briefly, what we looked at is that everybody's talking about austerity and cuts, and some cuts won't heal, and we know that as nurses. And so already frail and vulnerable patients, of course, we tend to them at the bedside. But then we are looking at overall, how do we prevent people coming into our hospitals who have treatable illnesses and injuries, keep them from coming in such desperate conditions in the first place? So why is it that all of the cuts that have been proposed have been on the backs of all the already vulnerable, the elderly? We're looking at Medicare and Social Security. There's been horrible proposed cuts in those, and cutbacks in adult day health centers and hospital services. And so we said, we looked at the people that aren't paying their fair share of taxes, the Wall Street traders, and we said, we need revenue. We need an infusion of revenue to prevent further cuts, to so that everyone has equal access to the American dream, to reclaim the American dream. So that's part of what the Robin Hood tax is all about. Take from those that have the ability to pay, and especially those that haven't been paying their fair share, to promote the social good of everyone upon whose efforts the collective economy will thrive.
And how does this work exactly?
Well, in terms of the Robin Hood tax, it's just a small tax. We've actually got legislation, and I'm going to invite Sam Brim, who's our coordinator of our campaign to build the Robin Hood tax movement, talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But basically, the Inclusive Prosperity Act is a bill. We have legislation now for a meaningful financial transaction tax on Wall Street traders. Once it's enacted, the legislation would impose a one-half of 1% trade tax, if you will, on stocks, 50 cents per every $100 worth of stocks. That could raise $350 billion annually to be used to meet human needs, expanding and improving Medicare, investing in education, job training, and providing assistance for in housing for low-income individuals, and rebuilding our infrastructure, and including public transportation. If there are jobs out there and people can't get to them, then we have a problem. And you know, again, this tax could be used to protect our environment, help end AIDS. So there's a lot of good that this money could do. And if you look at budgets as a moral document, of course, we've got to seek revenue from those with the ability to pay and not balance the budget on the backs of the working people that have already sacrificed and lost so much as a result of the stock market crash.
And this, if this moves forward, and this bill was introduced, the Robin Hood tax bill, by Representative Keith Ellison, Democrat of Minnesota, on September 14th, if this does move forward, it could bring in $350 billion a year?
Yes, that's correct. And it's not just me saying this. You know, I'm not an economist. I'm a nurse. I've identified a problem, certainly, and it breaks my heart. It really breaks my heart. In my own neighborhood, there's multi-generations of family members living together, siblings, cousins, people that have lost their jobs, and people that are sick. I mean, paramedics came to my neighbor's house because her father was dying, and he was living in the garage of their home, which they'd converted into an apartment for him, and he wasn't even 65 years old yet, you know. Should have been at the prime of his life, and yet had lost his job, had lost his insurance, and so we think that's unjust. So, you know, in terms of inclusivity, part of our campaign to heal America, the Nurses Campaign, is a Medicare for All movement, expanding and improving Medicare, because although the Affordable Care Act, which has been in the news so much lately, is a start, it certainly doesn't get us where we need to go in terms of improving health outcomes and our ability to control costs in health care.
And how many sponsors does the Robin Hood tax bill have at this point?
Currently, at this point, I believe there's 16 co-sponsors, and that's part of what our movement is about, is organizing communities to get their representatives to be accountable to the people that voted for them, not to their Wall Street donors. Of course, the system as it is right now, it's been said that Wall Street owns Washington, and we're setting out to change that in a participatory democracy. Our votes put legislators into office, and our votes can take them out of office. I think we need to collectively prick their conscience a little bit. And so Sand will be talking to you a little bit more about that.
Well, let's take a caller before we go to break. Let's hear from Pat, who was a nurse for 30 years. Hi, Pat. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks. You know, I'm so happy to hear that you're doing this interview, especially now during the time when nurses are striking. I just wanted to say that I've been retired for 3 years, and my colleagues tell me that at the hospital, the HMO where I worked, they're hiring more managers, they're having fewer bedside nurses who have pressure on them to work harder and faster. I think we remember the term speeding up the line.
Yes.
And nurses who do file assignment despite objection forms are brought up for being insubordinate. And they often have to do this because they either have too many patients or because the patients they have are too sick. And I just want to say, as an aging woman, I want empowered nurses. We all need RNs who can advocate for us, not compliant employees. But thanks very much.
All right. Well, thank you. And can you give us a sense, Deanne, in terms of the profession, nursing? I often hear that it's a lucrative profession. I have some younger friends who kind of travel around the country as nurses. What is it like right now? What is the climate like for new nurses today?
Well, first, if I may, I'd like to respond to Pat's comment.
Sure.
And that brings up part of the topic of today, of course, is the importance of being represented by a very powerful nurses union. She talked about a term there that some of your listeners may not be familiar with, is the assignment despite objection form. And most patients would believe that nurses would have the ability to speak up without fear of retaliation by their managers, and this is what Pat's talking about. In this economy, we've seen an exponential growth of managers who are not hands-on providers, and they retain no accountability for the care. That accountability is in the hands of the nurse, and the outcome of our work is to assure the safe passage of patients as we shepherd them and advocate for them and run interference for them during their hospital stay. And so what Pat was talking about, again, is that you shouldn't have to check your rights at the door of your workplace. And so having a strong union with rights that were actually assured by the federal government, once you're have elected to be represented by a union, you're entitled to specific rights. You're entitled to due process in the investigation. So, yes, nurses are very often threatened for discipline and with discipline for protesting their assignment. But we have a moral duty, an ethical duty, and it's explicit in the law of the state of California. Let me assure your listeners that we have the strongest Nursing Practice Act in the nation, and we have a specific duty to advocate for patients.
And hold that thought, Deanne. We're going to take a quick break. Today we are talking about the California Nurses Association and effective organizing. It's your call, and we'll be back after this.
Every Tuesday, the Your Call team sends out a weekly email newsletter that tells you what's coming up on the show and gives you resources to let you learn more and get involved. Subscribe today so you'll know what's coming up and can submit your question and comments before the show goes on the air. It's free and easy to sign up. Just click the email newsletter link at yourcallradio.org. And you can participate in today's show by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Or send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, Hanna Baba will be talking about what it will take to change the politics of U.S. aid to Africa. The U.S. has given $600 billion to various African nations over the last 50 years. Where's the money going? What strategies are effective? And what can we learn from grassroots activists in Africa working in their own communities? We rarely hear about that. So that is on tap for tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are speaking with Deanne McEwen, co-president of the California Nurses Association and vice president of National Nurses United. Registered nurses with the CNA began a two-day strike today at 10 Northern California hospitals in an ongoing dispute over wages, benefits, and service cutbacks. You can find more information about these actions at yourcallradio.org. We're also talking about the Robin Hood tax, also known as the financial transaction tax. The nurses have been pushing hard for this. Last Wednesday, they were in four cities calling on members of Congress to pass a bill, the Robin Hood tax bill, which it now has 16 co-sponsors. It's a 50-cent tax on every $100 of Wall Street trades. And if it passes, it would bring in about $350 billion a year. So we're talking about how the nurses are organizing, what is successful, and how have they managed over the past 15 years to grow by nearly 400%. If you'd like to join us, if you have a question or a comment for Deanne, if you're a nurse, if you have any overall comments about their organizing, because they are in the news on a regular basis, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What can we learn from the nurses who have managed to stay independent of political parties, unlike so many other groups? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So can you elaborate, Deanne, about what you were talking about earlier, just about retaliation of nurses who do speak out?
You know, sometimes being a good nurse, and what we understand in terms of professional nursing practice, is not the same in the employer's eyes as being a good employee. You know, they're looking at a bottom line, and they want to limit, of course, the amount that they have to pay for staffing, yet what in this economy, there's really no moral or ethical justification for these employers to do that, and trying to mandate overtime and further make the hospital an unsafe place for patients by short staffing, deliberate short staffing, to raise the amount of profit that they have to put back into management bonuses and severance packages. And by having a union and union representation, according to federal law, we have Weingarten rights. We have right to representation. An employer may allege that a nurse has done something that's insubordinate. I think that was the term Pat used, insubordination. But rather than insubordination, what Pat was talking about and what patients expect from us as nurses is that we're going to assert our independent professional clinical judgment on their behalf. We have a fiduciary duty to do that, to always represent what's in their best interests. Despite an employer policy or guideline, we have the force of law behind us, and that's really important for patients to understand. Hospitals must validate the competency of the registered nurses there before assigning them to patients, and that promotes the safety of patients, because you can't just have somebody walking in with a checklist that they filled out saying, oh, yeah, I can do that, and unfortunately, when you talk about travel nurses and all of that who don't live in this community, they come to California because of the good working conditions that we fought for, evidence-based working conditions where there's a registered nurse should have no more than a specified number of patients assigned to them, and hospitals are required to staff up from that minimum, according to the law, to meet the needs of patients, to provide technical support services, ancillary support services, lift teams. Imagine that, you know, that we have patients that are dependent, that have had strokes, that have had heart attacks, that are subject to traumatic injuries, and you know, a 120 or 140-pound registered nurse by herself or himself cannot turn that patient, lift that patient, mobilize that patient to progress them towards their goal of achieving the best possible health outcome. And so that's why being represented by a nurses union is important. And again, you've talked about politics here, which is very important. Why we're free of political influence by a party. You know, I think we need to start a new party in this country, and the patient care party, the nurses party, the workers party, to represent the interests of all of us. We've got this two-party system here where it really seems like it's enabling the status quo. And the real work of the people is not getting done, and that's part of our campaign to heal America, the nurses campaign, that everyone should be entitled to specific rights. And if we've internalized those values of fairness, justice, equality in this country, you know, of course, we live in a capitalist country, and a byproduct of that is that we tolerate enormous disparities in possessions but those disparities shouldn't extend to certain essential human services, such as the right to health care, clean environment, equal access to a free and fair public education. And so, you know, all of those things are important to us as nurses.
And you talked a little bit about achievements and the importance of being in a nurses' union. When you look back at, say, the last 10 years, what achievements can you point to? Where have you had victories?
Well, again, the most important one, of course, is the victory for the achieving the passage of AB 394, the safe patient staffing nurse-to-patient ratio law here in California. State Assemblywoman and then Senator Sheila Kuehl was our legislative author of that bill. That points to the fact that patient outcomes are better in California. Studies have shown now nationally, you know, for every patient on a general medical surgical ward above four that an RN has, each patient then is subject to a 7% or higher risk that they're going to suffer harm and even death if those working conditions are not addressed. And so, again, a national study, as high as 13% less risk of death in hospitals that adhere to the safe staffing standards set by law in California in other hospitals where they're achieved. And, of course, some hospitals aim to achieve those staffing standards by policy or by guideline, but the managers still have flexibility to base their staffing on budget concerns alone. And, you know, in this era where the aggregate profitability of hospitals is at an all-time high, historic high, in terms of the economy, why should patients suffer for lack of what they go to the hospital for in the first place, which is a need for registered nursing care? There's no other reason a patient would need to go to a hospital or be in a hospital except that their doctors have determined that, or their health, primary health provider have determined that they need the surveillance, they need the experience, they need the sophistication. And the registered nurse who's educated, you know, with a broad liberal arts background, not only in the social sciences, but, of course, in the biological and the physical sciences as well. And so that's our competency, you know, to be able to bring all of that education to bear. And then we're licensed, and our competency has to be demonstrated for the exclusive benefit of that stricken, vulnerable patient at the bedside.
Well, Deanne, it's 40 after, and I know that you are now going to rush over to the protests, and we're going to be speaking with your colleague, Sand Brim. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, Rose. And here, let me hand you over to Sam.
Okay,
thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. That is Deanne McEwen, co-president of the California Nurses Association. She had to take off to head over to one of the many strikes that are taking place today. It's a two-day strike at 10 hospitals, including Alta Bates, Summit in Berkeley, Good Samaritan in San Jose, and Eden Medical in Castro Valley. Some 5,000 nurses are represented by the California Nurses Association at these 10 hospitals. And you can read more about this to find out why the nurses are striking and details about each specific hospital at yourcallradio.org. And we'd love to hear from you. Today we are spending the hour with the California Nurses Association to talk about effective organizing. How do they do it? How do they decide which campaigns to take on? How do they decide to take on the Robin Hood tax, for example? And if you have any questions about the work that they do, if you're a member, if you just sort of watch them from afar and you'd like to comment, and you have any comments specifically about effective organizing, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. And specifically on this Robin Hood tax, what are your thoughts on this financial transaction tax? Again, it's a 50-cent tax on every $100 of a Wall Street trade. That's a tax of 0.5%, adding up to $350 billion a year. So what are your thoughts on this? Do you support it? Do you have any questions about it? 866-798-8255. And joining us now is Sand Brim, Coordinating Campaign Director for the Main Street Campaign, the Robin Hood Tax. Hi, Sand. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thank you so much for having me. And I just wanted to tell you, I'm actually not the director. What I'm coordinating is the nurses' activist part of the Robin Hood Tax campaign. There are many people working on this campaign.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. So let's talk a little bit about this, because this didn't get much media, but I looked at the photos and the videos. Last Wednesday, there were actions in New York, Boston, LA, and San Francisco calling on members to support the Robin Hood tax bill. And I understand that a number of nurses were gathered outside of Nancy Pelosi's district office in San Francisco. And the district director, Dan Bermel, dismissively told the nurses they had 90 seconds to talk to him. So what took part in that exchange?
Well, as I understand, I think the nurses simply laid out the absolute compelling necessity for us to deal with revenue in this country and for us to address it very specifically from the one group that has been given the resources to recover from the recession, and that is the finance sector. I think he was somewhat taken aback from the clarity that the nurses have. I mean, the nurses, you know, as you've heard Deanne talk about, come to this from the perspective of patient advocacy. And when you're standing in that position, you know, the clarity comes. And, you know, they talked to him about what it could do, how clear it was. what a compelling issue it is at this point in time when revenue is the issue on the table. And so they were very, very articulate, as they always are, you know, in addressing this issue. And again, I want to come back to, they when they come from this position, as they do, of patient advocacy, everything flows.
Right. Well, and also, I understand that there were some arrests at various offices around the country.
Yes, and I'll be quite frank with you. There were a few arrests. I don't know what the outcome of those were. I think they were minimal, and they were released, you know, within a couple of hours.
And so what, I mean, this has 15 co-sponsors so far, or 16, which is actually fairly, this is a pretty low number, right? Do you think that more politicians will sign on to this?
Well, it's actually, for this kind of bill, it is not a low number. And I'll just tell you, Rose, if I could a little bit come back, you know, the bill actually initiated by nurses going to Keith Ellison's, Representative Keith Ellison's office, and asking him to bring, you know, to sponsor the bill. And once they did that, then nurses with other allies from other groups throughout the country started meeting with congressional people. And that's how all of these people have signed on. It's 16 co-sponsors, people who have committed to co-sponsorship so far. And it's all coming about from what I would say is a grassroots effort. You know, people actually going to their congressman or congresswoman and sitting down and saying, this is our imperative, this is where we need to get our revenue, and that's how people are signing on. And I'll say yes, there will be others for sure. And within the next few weeks, once again, nurses and other people and other organizations are going to be gathering and going to other congressional offices. So for certain, there will be other people signing on.
And we're talking about $350 billion a year. How will that money be allocated, and who will be in charge of this?
Well, the allocation is going to be obviously and is going to be decided by Congress. The language in the bill is intentional. It's very directive. It's for education, housing. I think Deanne went through all the different issues, you know, global poverty and AIDS, particularly, you know, global AIDS, me addressing the global AIDS crisis. Once invested in these kinds of issues, of course, we can produce jobs to replace the 8 million jobs that have been lost in the recession. So the allocation itself is going to be, I would say, is going to be a movement-based fight. And that's why we are approaching the Robin Hood tax bill as a movement, because we see it as an issue that people in different constituencies and people from different issue-based organizations are going to have a real strong say in. And we think that's really the way we should work. This is participatory democracy. It's not a group of men and women sitting up in a room, you know, making this decision. It should be people voicing where their needs are, and Congress should be responding to those people.
And we should say that a similar financial transaction tax was implemented in France, and then in Spain and Germany, they're poised to also introduce something similar thanks to pressure from a growing global movement.
Absolutely, Rose. The within the last 2 weeks, the European Union has announced that it is pursuing a Robin Hood tax. And that's because of the pressure from 9 countries within the European Union stepped forward and said, we're demanding a Robin Hood tax. And those 9 countries then were able to meet the quorum to get the European Union to endorse it. So now we have the entire European Union endorsing the Robin Hood tax.
And you can find more information about this at robinhoodtax.org. And let's hear from another listener. Let's go to Jerry in Berkeley. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to the show.
Hi. And listening to this, Robin Hood tax reminds me when I taught school in New York City through the 60s to the end of the, till 93. There was always a fight going on with Wall Street, and there was always this need to get this transaction tax, because they, Wall Street and the banks, always threatened the city to leave town if they got that tax. And as a result, as a union member there, we had a stall on our incomes for years, and pension cuts. This is an old, old story with this kind of tax, and I hope that this movement will get to some of the unions, like the United Federation of Teachers or the Transit Workers, because they have a stake in this, too. And second, I can see the nurses walking in front of Sutter here in Berkeley, and I was reminded that when these people go out on strike, they may be locked out from 3 to 5 days per day they're out on strike, so they're paying a very high price. And I watch buses come up to the hospital with shades drawn, and behind them are nurses that they've collected from maybe Alabama or Florida or Georgia, and fly them up here and give them room and board and then sneak them out behind these shades. So it's in my view, Sutter is not a healthy operating organization for people who work there. It can't be much good for patients either. That's my comment. Maybe these are connected.
Huh. Well, thank you. What do you know about that, Sand?
About the nurses being out on strike? Or
well, he was talking about nurses being bussed in from other states.
For this strike? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The nurses on this strike are the Sutter nurses.
No, he's talking about nurses that will take their place.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I'm so sorry, Rose. Yeah. I know that this has always been an issue, and I know management attempts to do this in every single strike that we have, is they attempt to bus in nurses from other states, and there is an effort to get an interstate compact on that so that that can be done more easily, and that is something that we are opposing. And when nurses cross that picket line, you know, each one of them bring into the clinical situation a reduced ability to meet the needs in that organization, in that facility. I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, there was an incident where that happened, where a nurse went into a facility, she was bussed in by management, and she inaccurately gauged, I believe it was medication, and actually killed a patient. You're bringing in people who don't know the facility, who don't know the methodology in the facility, have not done the assessment, and they are not capable of meeting the care that's needed in the facility. So when the facilities do this, they are taking a big chance on the health and well-being of their own patients.
And what happens to the nurses who decide to go on strike?
When the nurses decide to go on strike, as he said, it's a major step. Because when they go out on a one-day strike, they are often locked out, you know, up to 5 days and sometimes more. The facilities are very aggressive. The hospitals and the clinics are very aggressive against nurses when they go on strike. So people see nurses out, and they think, oh, it's a one-day strike. This is a major commitment, you know, and almost always the issues involve patient care. And I think people in the community know this, that the nurses are there. They're not out there looking for their own benefits. They're out there, that is often a part of what they're talking about, but what they're primarily talking about is patient care issues, shortcuts in staffing, you know, increase in technology that takes the human factor out, which is proven over and over again not to be the most effective way towards patient care.
And how do you read what we're facing right now? Because I've been closely following what's happening with Walmart, and we're expecting a number of strikes on Black Friday, which is the biggest shopping day of the year. And they're actually now calling it Black Thursday, which is so bizarre.
I know.
It's like give thanks in the morning and then go buy things you don't need at night, right? But what? How do you read this? Because it's a huge deal that Walmart is striking. You've got the nurses' strike, and I'm just seeing right now that a California strike is disrupting activity at the Port of Oakland. You've got striking custodial and maintenance workers in California at the Port of Oakland. So it seems like there's something really happening with workers across the country right now.
You know what I think has happened primarily is that we've hit a wall in terms of any income inequality. You know, the working people's income has stalled out. Prices are increasing. The productivity levels are being sped up, and it's reached a crisis point. People cannot do it anymore. They can't meet it anymore. And where at one time, you know, there was particularly you know, some unions were coming at it with concessions. I think now that workers are beginning to say, we can't take this anymore. Mm. We can't. We're losing our homes. You know, we're seeing our children unable to get an education. We can't meet health care. You know, I mean, 50% of the bankruptcies in this country are because of health care, medical bills. So I think that what is happening is you've seen a saturation of people's ability to contain the austerity measures that have been taken against them, both in and outside the workplace. And even though it is a painful process, and it is a difficult process for people, I think it is a hopeful process, because we're now seeing that workers are beginning to support each other, and the community is beginning to support people who work.
Right, and I want to mention, because I'll be off the air for the next week or so, but Walmart, I was interviewing an organizer last night who said, for example, in Oklahoma, I mean, they've got no support, obviously not even union support, but no support at all, and the workers just sort of talked amongst themselves and said, you know what, let's walk out. I mean, they're doing this on their own. And we're talking about people, I don't know what they make in Oklahoma. I don't know what the minimum wage there. It's probably $7.50. So let's say they make $8 an hour. They're not even getting enough wages for a full-time job, having a hard time feeding their families. And they know that they could easily be fired for this, but it's so bad, they're walking out.
Oh, well, the thing about it is, particularly companies like Walmart, when they go into an area, They financially rape the area.
Right.
You know, they go in and they get the city to pay for paving their parking lot. They get the city or the counties to pay for a great deal of the construction work that is done. And then they go in and they hire people at minimum wage, and those people have to go on food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're going into a community and they are totally undermining the financial structure of that community, and that throws everyone in that community in crisis. So I think, you know, when you see workers, and that's what people need to pay attention to, is when you see workers spontaneously say, we can't take it anymore, we're going to walk out on our own, that should tell you, you know, we are a culture in crisis. And that's why the Robin Hood tax, you know, has so much appeal, because it is a tax that actually addresses the heart of the problem today, and that is a financial sector that has taken control of this country, and it is economically putting it on a roller coaster that is unsustainable. And the Robin Hood tax, to not only, you know, take money out of that sector that and put it back into the sectors that it belongs, you know, sectors that actually benefit the community. But the Robin Hood tax will also stabilize the stock market, which is something we desperately need right now. And Rose, if I could just really quickly.
Sure, we have just about a minute left.
Okay, it's 0.5% on stocks. It's only 0.1% on bonds. And on derivatives, those little algorithmic high-frequency tradings, the tax is actually 0.005%. But that's where some money can be generated, because when you're hitting 1,000 a second, you know, every time that tax is going to apply. And that will stabilize the commodities market and stabilize the stock market.
And just quickly, what are your hopes for the new year for the Nurses Association?
My hopes for the new year is that the Nurses Association will grow throughout the country, and we will see nurses begin to fight more and more for patients' rights, more and more for good, strong, appropriate health care delivery, and that the nurses throughout the country will deepen their campaign to heal America.
Well, thank you so much. Sand Brim is an activist with the California Nurses Association working on the Robin Hood tax. Thank you so much, Sand. Have a good holiday.
Thank you so much, and happy holiday.
Thank you. You too. And thank you for listening. Have a great holiday. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call, and here's what's coming up tomorrow. What will it take to change the politics of U.S. aid to Africa? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about U.S. financial aid in Africa. The U.S. has given more than $600 billion to various African nations over the last 50 years. Where is that money going exactly? And what strategies prove effective? Join us at 10 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. What can we learn from grassroots activists in Africa working in their own communities? It's Your Call with Hanal Baba and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Debbie Kennedy is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.